Okay, this is Mae Brussel, and it's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. Broadcast number 627, and we're almost winding down the year December the 12th, 1983. Regarding the Rebel magazine, which came out, and I've talked about it in anticipation, there are problems with the Rebel. I knew there would be. There is an executive editor, Jim Good, and there is a senior editor, Mark Cooper, who thought that Larry Flint was sufficiently tucked away that they could mess around with Mae Brussel. Larry started the magazine and wanted me to have one issue every month, and I made about 40 phone calls to Los Angeles that weren't returned, asking the deadline or the subject matter for Jim as soon as the Nazi story was finished. It turns out I don't believe that Jim or Mark had any intention of printing me unless they had to, and they knew that Larry had problems. The reason I know it is that I never got a return call on the subject, one of the three subjects, and I went ahead and did the Grenada invasion, which is a major political event in the United States with its links to Robert Vesco, Ramsey Clark, Edward Bennett Williams, Mr. Califano, Ronald Reagan, Caspar Weinberger, The Garden Plot. I have evolved a script that is fantastic, and I'll do more on it next week. I said I'm going to do Grenada, and there was this dead silence. I took the first manuscript down before Thanksgiving, and they said, rewrite this or that. I came home and worked, and these gentlemen did not respond, did not answer calls, and intended, along with Ted Rubenstein, he knew what was going on down there, intended to go to press without Mae in the second issue. My script was ready, and I was working here and there, and they decided that they would fool Mae and Larry Flint and not print it. And Larry is out of the mental hospital that the COINTEL program slapped on him, I believe the MK Ultra treatment that we've talked about on the air. He called me yesterday. I was surprised he was home, and I said I would meet with him tomorrow, and we would talk about what happened in Los Angeles. It's controversial. These people are not in good faith. They do not like Mae. The team was stacked with people who do not like my exposing both the Democrats and the Republicans, the Ramsey Clarks, the Bernard Cords, the Vesco connections, and also Mark Cooper was put on Rebel by Don Fried. Don Fried suggested him to Larry Flint. Don Fried, the writer, his attorney for his lawsuit, he was sued by the CIA and Mr. Phillips regarding the book he did on Orlando Letelier's murder. The attorney for Don Fried happens to be Ramsey Clark. Ramsey Clark is the attorney for Bernard Cord, who killed Maurice Bishop down in Grenada. And this week on NBC News, they announced that Robert Vesco was funding Bernard Cord $45,000 and also put the money up to build the airstrip in Grenada that was excused for the invasion of the island. The plans to take over the island were in 1979 in March, as soon as Sir Eric Gary goes to the United Nations, where Peter Byrne is, and says, take me to your friend Jimmy Carter. We'll do more of that on the air as this goes on, and you'll get that story. It's a dynamite story, but these people that were assigned, put in there, they can't tell me there's no conflict of interest, because a listener, subscriber to World Watchers, took to KPFA, Pacifica Station in Los Angeles, my tapes, copies of my tapes, and Mark was news director of the station. He never would put them on, wouldn't listen, totally censored. This is the important thing when I talk about raising money for Kazoo and your listener-sponsored stations that carry World Watchers. There are stations like Pacifica stations that screen out any connections to Nazis, organized crime, the Vesco connections, and the Edward Bennett Williams to Califano, to Peter Byrne, to Ramsey Clark, the whole gang, and it is a very heavy story. Ramsey Clark was the attorney general when Martin Luther King was killed, and he said the very next day, April the 6th, it's a lone assassin, no Klan member, nobody from organized crime. Now, James Earl Ray said he was involved with Mr. Youngblood, who came from Atlanta, Georgia. And Youngblood worked with Mr. Habash and Larry McDonald and the same people that Robert Byron Watson talked about. And they also tie into the Grenada story with Robert Vesco and the mob down in that island, securing that island for the mob and for resorts like Resorts International and so forth. So I will be talking to Larry Flynn about that by the time next week's program is on. I'll share this with you. Another condition I have to have with Rebel, if I'm going to write any more for them, is that I will do not one story a week, but one long story every month, like the JFK and the Nazis. I'll do an equivalent of a 50 typewritten page on the Grenada invasion. I turned in a 22 page. I want the whole ball of wax of all these various interlocking conspiracies, even going into the John Hinckley family and Edward Bennett Williams and George Bush, who was CIA director when the medical school started down there, and also was the CIA director when Orlando Letelier was murdered. I want to do one story a month, one cover story, a big story. And the other condition of Rebel, if I'm to have my name, they have a list of contributors, contributing editors there, and it says Mae Brussel, Jeff Cohn, Don Fried, Timothy Leary, Jonathan Marshall, and so forth. I will not be in the company of Timothy Leary or G. Gordon Liddy. They've put Jim Good has brought G. Gordon Liddy to Rebel to write book reviews on people on the Kennedy assassination. If they can't tell their background or involved with the conspirators and offer anything new, I won't be on any publication list with any bunch of killers or dope dealers or mind control distributors. I don't keep that kind of company. You know, Sartre was the existential philosopher, said you don't begin to live until you're not afraid to die. And I carried another step further. You don't begin to live until you're not afraid to be broke. And I've done a lot of things to keep myself going on the edge, and sometimes you end up with $10 a month, and at the end of the month, or you borrow $10. And all last year, the year before, I was cooking for a family in Pebble Beach. Before that, I took care of a blind lady 3 days a week, and I'd go in and cook 2 hours a day, 3 days a week, and bring in the food, cook their meals, and leave. They'd have enough for the whole week. I don't mind that. I like that. That's the kind of job I like to do. I do it well. There's no amount of money that will keep me with Rebel, with Jim Good or Mark Cooper, unless Larry Flynn and I sit down this week and talk to them. And also, another point is that I mentioned on the air that Larry Flynn ran that ad about $1 million reward for information on the assassinations. Those people have to bring it to me to screen through and not to Jim Good, because he hands it to G. Gordon Liddy. And that is treason. It is traitorous to sit with those kind of people. And if Larry doesn't understand that sophisticated concept, it doesn't matter. I never knew Larry Flynt before September, when I offered to do a story with him on Larry McDonald. And we can remain good friends. I have a lot of friends or associates that I don't have any business dealings with of any kind. And I can always be his friend. And I appreciate the fact that he had the courage to publish in The Rebel what he did. And it took courage, believe me. But beyond that, I have no obligation, no signed contract. He called and he was outraged. He says, "You're my best researcher." Well, I feel I am, and he appreciates that. But I won't deal with Liddy, G. Gordon Liddy, or Timothy Leary, or any of those scumbags, Mitchell Werbel or Gordon Novell, or any of them. If he wants to deal with them, they bankrupt him, got him to spend all his money, got him acting crazy in front of the news media. That's his problem. That isn't mine. Before I knew him, he was sane and well. And when you mingle with these kind of people, those are the risks you take. That's the way the cookie crumbles. But it's not my problem. And I just like to do investigative work, and I don't want to mingle with the likes of these people. So, and then another thing is, besides giving information to them, the intent was to have a magazine where new researchers who maybe done work for 10, 20, 30 years who aren't known, whose names are not household words, like George Seldes, who's written so many books and gotten out, in fact, an older man. You may have seen just a shot of him in the movie Reds, but they didn't even identify his picture with his name. And I hated that, too. That's a cheap stunt to not give a man the pleasure of recognition before he dies. And he's an elderly gentleman living in New England. We should have George Seldes' material that he published years ago into Rebel. We don't need Timothy Leary with his old worn-out stories about disseminating his acid. He didn't have a license to do that. During these years, if you gave acid to somebody, you could be busted and arrested. When he gives it, he calls it turning on, and he gets $100,000 a year just to speak or get a movie or a radio station. I don't want any part of those people, and I want to know who's answering the ads, and I want the manuscripts. Jim Good got a manuscript, a report from Sherman Skolnick in Chicago. He returns it with a kill fee of $175. Sherman has worked his whole entire life to overturn the courts, to expose the mob, the criminal. He did extensive work with the Dorothy Hunt plane crash, the Nazis with John Hinckley Jr. He had polio when he was a young man, and he's in it crippled, paraplegic. He goes out cold nights, days and nights, goes to bat for anybody, goes to libraries, copies things, doesn't have a copying machine at home, works his entire life serving this country, one of the best patriots we have. And the intent of Larry Flynt was that these people would be heard and become known in their lifetime. Now, I told Larry Flynt about Sherman Skolnick, and the minute he was in trouble with the Supreme Court, Larry was in trouble there, and he was assigned to Judge Shapiro, who worked with the CIA and the mob, or alleged, I'll say, not for sure, because I don't want to get sued by Judge Shapiro. Let's say that Sherman Skolnick had information about things in Chicago that should be questioned about the lawyer Shapiro, not necessarily assigned to the Larry Flynt case, just as the lawyer who was assigned to the Larry Flynt case, the judge, was the CIA attorney for Chicago, Illinois, and was the CIA attorney at the time that Sam Giancana and Jack Ruby from Chicago worked with organized crime and the CIA and had a part in the killing of John Kennedy. That's the judge whose eye he spit in when he was in Chicago. I mean, I think it's too bad he got this rap, but spitting in the eye of that bomb, it would be a pleasure. I wish I had a chance to do it, but maybe not in the court, maybe off court. Okay. So, Skolnick, I got a call, and Larry Flynt was in trouble. Skolnick went down with his wheelchair, and wheelchair by wheelchair, they sat, and he went to bat for him, pushed his way in, had a press conference, kept Larry's name in the news, maybe saved his life. He had word that some mishap was going to happen in there involving a doctor from New York, and I called out California, the Flynt House, and we got people there moving, one, two, three, and moving really fast into the case, and nothing happened. And there aren't many people in the world that go to bat for you, put their life on the line. So at 2 a.m, armchair by armchair, and Larry Flynt is saying to Sherman, I think they're going to kill me in here. Well, Sherman kept that thing on his radio. He kept it going, and he let the world know, and he called the Chicago Tribune, the Chicago Sun. He called the FBI, and Larry Flynt had a little army, and then I talked about it, called Washington, called the White House. They said call the White House, called the FBI about what he was publishing and doing. And the result was that he's alive and home. And if they touched him, and I was talking about this MK Ultra drugging of him, then we could get back to all the back tapes and play it. So what does Jim Good down there? He returns the manuscript. I don't know if it was readable or not, but with a good editor or reader, I have someone here, we can write it so it's presentable, and it would, I know, would be new material. And we don't need the Timothy Learys who take a section out of an old book that anybody can buy for a quarter at a book sale anyway and sell it for $2.95 in the Rebel. Larry Flynt has friends out there. He's got a lot of people that would go to bat for him. And I'm going to see that Jim Good doesn't screen them out, or that nasty Mark Cooper. If they want to, they can do what they want, and I'm out of it completely. It was a nice experience. I did one article, and hopefully the next week or two, in my story on Grenada and the interlocking links of, as I say, George Bush and Califano and Edward Bennett Williams and the CIA, the medical hospital, the mental experiments, I'll put it together for you in a way that makes sense, and Larry Flynt will publish it, and those two guys can shove it. They won't like it because their role is to keep this stuff out. And so we'll see what goes on. That's what's going on at the Rebel. And if you can go and buy it anywhere in the country while it's still there, do it. It'll be a collector's item someday. And when it's out of print this next week, when the next one comes out, I'll try and obtain copies so that you can order them for me. But I want you to buy them from the liquor stores, the bookstores, and support them and buy it off the stand so that they know you want it. But Rebel 2 and 3, for I'm Naive Russell, isn't in there. You can buy it if you want it. The address, you have it inside your other Rebel if you got it. And Larry Flint's address, I'll put on the air next week. You can write and tell him that you don't appreciate the censorship of Jim Good or Mark Cooper. I don't want to give you the office at Century City because I don't think it'll get to him. If they censor us now, they'll censor it later. And I'll give you Larry Flint's home address. I didn't bring it with me. He said in the opening introduction, the first magazine, the government, in particular the Reagan administration, is determined to stifle independent voice. Like in this magazine, it is dedicated to exposing lies that are working tools of the big government and business, whether the subject is secret little murderous wars being hatched in the Pentagon or CIA headquarters, Pentagon or CIA. That's Defense Department. That's one step higher because everyone blames the CIA usually, or government frame-up of those who speak out, or the cozy relationship between the mob and groups of elected officials, or the multi-million-dollar rip-offs and fraud perpetuated against the American people, the Rebel will be relentless in exposing the real facts. Now, people like Sherman Skolnick have been doing all of that, and then he gets a check back. No thank you, up yours. We don't want you. Bring on Leary and G. Gordon Liddy. No, it's not going to be that way, not with Mae Brussel. I am satisfied to do just what I do, and I think I do it well, and share it with you listeners on this station and on other stations, or people, private people who subscribe to these tapes, and we'll update more. I'll give you an account of what happened in Los Angeles when I met Larry Flint and see what goes on. And, of course, if I'm in the home and Gordon Novell and G. Gordon Lee, I don't think you'll have them there. I wouldn't go in. Okay. Now let's update a little bit of the news real fast that's going on, the rest of the news of the week. But this is very important. The situation of a man creating a method for people to get information out, and then his own team come in and with no intent of allowing this to continue because he's out of sight and out of mind. So if he were there, it wouldn't have happened. And so we'll see how far they can go and what they intend to do if he has control. This is Jim Good is the fellow that chopped up my article on the 007, and Larry was so furious because he had really emasculated and changed the intent and the title and took every juicy part out of it. And Larry said, I'm putting the whole thing in, and it's in the February Hustler right now. Okay, now to update a few interesting stories. There's one on John DeLorean. The officials are still trying to trace DeLorean's millions. I update this every once in a while. This is from the Houston Post. They're looking in England. They're looking in Detroit. They can't find where the money went. There's a lot of money, $15.5 million, that went to Lotus Car that came from Panama. Now, what I keep saying, this Panama-registered company, the GPD Services, I keep saying, and I've had it on the air for the last 4 or 5 months, that from sources that have been very accurate, former writers, investigators, plane pilots, they told me that this DeLorean cash went down to Klaus Barbie, you remember the broadcast, and then went into a Swiss bank where the attorney of Joseph Mengele deposited it. Now, up to that point, I've called Detroit, I've called the FBI, I've called a lawyer in Miami with a multi-million dollar lawsuit. They reach a block. They just simply cannot find this money. And I don't, if the Klaus Barbie connections are true, they never will find it because they can't admit that John DeLorean was dealing with Klaus Barbie just a month or prior before Barbie was arrested, because then that opens up the Johnny Carson and the Robert Durand and the Jack Contain, the Hollywood cocaine connections to the Nazis and Klaus Barbie. Then we would open up and investigate very highly the Christian Von Damme, the husband of Elaine Von Damme, the Bank of America in Bolivia, and the connections of the Chase Manhattan Bank to this whole thing. There's a can of worms that gets into the very backbone of America. This is the United States of America. And when you get to that level, there's no way to tell the truth and there's no way to cover. So it seeps out. It's like some bad chemical that they throw into the sewer system and it seeps and everybody gets poisoned a little until they finally have to admit what the problem was. Incidentally, I mentioned on the half hour before World Watchers started, and I want to repeat it here, that two members of a congressional committee were at my home yesterday. This is for the people who get the broadcast elsewhere that didn't get to hear this. And we went over the history of Fritz Kramer, and I took the sheet of every broadcast that accompanies these broadcasts with the sources of information and gave it to them and followed the American Fritz Kramer and a little about Hitler's Fritz Kramer. They're out here looking for a specific congressional committee on the war criminals that came to the United States. And I want to be very sure in my mind and for you that prisoner number 33 in the docket at Malmedy, charged with the Malmedy massacres, tried at Dachau, released by Senator Joe McCarthy. I want to make sure that that's not the Fritz Kramer behind Henry Kissinger, the mentor of Henry Kissinger, who has run our Pentagon since 1948, the plans department of the Pentagon, who now shares an office with Daniel Graham of High Frontier and John Reese of Western Goals and the highest level of military intelligence. Now, I've gone almost as far. I can keep going and writing letters to various agencies. And I got some more information from a listener in New York that I'll put on the air probably next week on Fritz Kramer. But on the basis of what I've done, I want them to pursue this on specific areas, and they're looking into them. The main one was Hitler's Fritz Kramer is in a few history books at the Battle of the Bulge, the Ardennes Offensive, with Mr. Diedrich and some of the top generals, Mr. Monkey, the head of the Death's Head. But I don't know what books of German history or war that Kramer was in, what battle, whether he was in with Rommel in the desert, whether he was in Poland or near Minsk, Russia, or whether he's in Czechoslovakia. I can't believe that Hitler has a general that just becomes a general in 1944 and is there for one battle and then gets on the staff of General Patton, along with a little young Henry Kissinger as the teacher or tutor in the gang at Oberammergau after the war. So I'm wanting, going through several hundreds of books on the war, can't locate anything, German Documentation Center from Munich or from Berlin or from the Holocaust Center or from Palestine, where this guy of Hitler's was until the middle of 1944 and the end of 1944, December, for that battle. Where in the world was he before he became a general? And if we can't find him anywhere, then they have to ask Mr. Kissinger's Kramer under oath, and I gave them a list of questions, and just to say it's not him isn't enough. We have to know what cities and so forth he was in. So because of this radio program, World Watchers, listeners had written letters to Congress, members of Congress, about my work looking for this particular Nazi and some others. And then I think the letter sat there maybe for a while, and I think it was written a little while ago. Then Larry Flint sent two tapes, one on Fritz Kramer, particularly Daniel Graham, with their office number and phone number to every member of Congress. And he sent broadcast 6, 17, 18. I've talked about those. And so the combination of sharing this publicly with you makes it harder for them to cover it up because they know on the air that you are like my family. I talk to you and I make broadcasts as if you are calling my house and talking on the telephone. It's a very personal communication, and many of you I've known for so long, you are really closer than most members of my family. So I have no secrets, and I'm not waiting for a punchline to publish a book. The book runs every week, and I'm letting you know about it. So the DeLorean Millions, if it goes to Klaus Barbie, then it would go to Christian von Dahm and Henry Kissinger again with Klaus Barbie down in Bolivia after he had Klaus Barbie in Oberammergau. So I'm interested in these stories on tracing the money because they just simply can't find it. And it's been a year this January. There was a story in the Oregon paper a listener sent me when Larry Flint flew up there to Klamath Falls. I mentioned this ingredient that he had that he was going to take to cure Yuri Andropov. It said he was traveling with an entourage of 35 people and stopped at Klamath Municipal Airport to pick up blue-green manna and flew again. He was going to pick up Victor Coleman, K-O-L-L-M-A-N, a Klamath Fall biochemist who developed the algae extract. You notice he's not a doctor, no medical school or any degree behind that. He's the one who disseminates these pills and these drops that Larry Flint gave to me, and he was taking them, and I would say to him on the telephone, who's going crazy, you or me? Now, I'm not accusing Victor Coleman of anything in those little drops, but even if they're innocent drops and they're at Larry's house, you can put something in the drops because you know he's going to take them, right? He gets up in the morning, bring me my drops, and then you put it in the drops because he's taking four or five every few hours. No, thank you. That's where they come from Klamath Falls. And somebody did tell me that they were made in Atlanta, Georgia, and I want to check that out with him and tell him he should not disseminate any substance to put in anybody's mouth. We should decide for ourselves what we take in our mouth. And I'm not saying this guy is part of any big conspiracy, but as I've told you before, it just isn't safe to put this stuff into your mouth. And he should have known that. If he's going to be so political, he should have known that a while back. Another incident that was in the Houston Post was Larry Flynt was indicted with the U.S. flag incident, and it said the criminal complaint against him wearing that flag in court, and Mitchell Werbel, this high man from the Defense Department, was with him, and of course, not much was made of that, was signed by Jerry West, the same FBI agent who arrested John DeLorean. So not only was he there because of the DeLorean tapes, but this incident was causing him a lot of pain, a lot of economic problems, and the same guy was tagging him. Now, there was another story this week. Larry Flynt named the source of the DeLorean tape that allegedly now has been altered and forged, and evidently the federal officials, or rather Mr. Hoffman, Timothy Hoffman, working for them, they didn't threaten to kill his child. I think these tapes were altered. And there were stories in the UPI, San Jose Mercury, Flynt names reporter source of tapes. And then it mentions that Gordon Novell, he mentioned a government agent, he says, was given him by Gordon Novell, a New Orleans businessman who had extensive contact with John DeLorean and also with columnist Jack Anderson, who had the same tapes. Now, there's another story in the Los Angeles Herald, Louisianan source of DeLorean tape, question mark. This was on the anniversary of Kennedy's death, November 22nd, 1983. A government investigation is going to Gordon Novell, who had contacts with Jack Anderson. And remember Jack Anderson's strong ties with Frank Sturgis, Frank Fiorina, who's involved with the Kennedy assassination. And Anderson's involved with close to Novell. It said Novell has been identified as a former private eye, a gun dealer, a promoter, prosecuted several times by Louisiana authorities in a strange case involving a firebomb, conspiracy to firebomb part of New Orleans with balloons. The conviction was overturned. He was wanted by Jim Garrison in New Orleans. I've mentioned that. Pardon me, regarding the Kennedy assassination. And he currently was at the Larry Flynt Mansion. I don't know if he's still there now. And it says that Gordon Novell talked with DeLorean by phone several times, visited him in his New Jersey home. See how they cook this up. They get Larry Flynt in trouble and try to get the DeLorean case thrown out because the government wants it thrown out anyway. And it tells about Novell's contacts in 1961. He was involved with the operations with the Bay of Pigs invasion. That was Edwin Wilson and Frank Turpel and Theodore Shackley. Novell was arrested in New Orleans in 1976, conspiracy to commit arson. He was transferred to the state courts there. And they have his role as a suspect in the Kennedy assassination and firebombing and also his scandalous police record. And for some reason or other, Larry Flynt thinks that he's going to take this CIA criminal electronics expert with his past track record on his camp to be a security guard. I mean, oh, my gosh. Can you imagine amassing a fortune, being so brilliant, making it in the American system, accumulating so much, and then losing it because these people have framed you? I remember about 3 months ago in the middle of September, I believe, when he was going to have lunch with the attorney, Greg Boutzer. And I said, don't do that. I mean, for goodness sakes, don't do that. And I think we might be able to date when his troubles began. I don't know what was discussed at lunch. He went. But everybody wanted to see it, including Boutzer. I said no, and he went deeper into the trap. Now, on the anniversary of John Kennedy's death, I wanted to have a press conference in front of Larry Flynt's house. In fact, I called the L.A. Times. Larry turned out to be in Dallas. And I wanted to tell them to have Mr. Mitchell Werbel and Gordon Novell tell who killed Kennedy, because they would know. And here's a interesting contradiction of the event or events that should be checked out. Bob Cutler has spent endless years and written a book on Gordon Novell as being the umbrella man, with a picture of him shooting a flechette, a small missile, into the throat of John Kennedy, holding the umbrella weapon, which the CIA confirmed they had, and these small missiles, as being the man who was responsible for this missile in Kennedy's throat. Now, Larry Flynt was offering $1 million reward on the anniversary of Kennedy's death to solve the mystery. And Bob Cutler printed a book that the man who did the murder was the one in Larry Flynt's house on that exact day. Now, it's 30 minutes. We'll take a one-minute break now and then come back for some more of this story. I think this is an interesting story about Novell being in the home of Larry Flynt, because it's the anniversary of Kennedy's death. On the anniversary of Kennedy's death, November 22nd, comes an article that Novell is at the mansion of Larry Flynt, living there and working for him, and offering a reward for somebody who killed him. Now, if Novell really did it, it seems to me, if Bob Cutler is right, I'll go back with this after 1 minute. We'll take a pitch first for 1 minute. I usually do ask you to contribute to the station before we go on to the second half of World Watcher. This is a fundraising week.